explicit violence in your writings?
It's what I do, is one answer. I write horror fiction. There is a kind of curiosity that we have as human beings about our life processes. One of our last life processes is death. It's a legitimate subject for curiosity. We shouldn't be ashamed that the macabre or the morbid exercises some fascination upon us. I tell it like it is. If it's there in my mind's eye, I put it on the page. And that seems to me to be a legitimate way to write.
Thank you, everyone, for joining, and welcome to another edition of Written in Red, the horror reader and writer's podcast, where you can win cash prizes. And no, we appreciate you guys joining us again, whether it be through the YouTube stream. It's not a stream. It's a video that we upload. Maybe we'll stream someday. Maybe we'll cross streams, guys. Who knows? Mm. But I think we appreciate if you're checking it out on the YouTube video, or if you're checking it out through Spotify, iTunes, and whatnot. Just be sure to subscribe, drop some comments if you can. That always helps out. And click the alert bell if you don't want to miss stuff. So, Written in Red, we've got an awesome show today. We're going to be talking about submitting to submissions. As we said, once we got kind of through our self-publishing arc, we wanted to move on to discussing the submissions process. Even though this podcast is primarily about self-publishing, we do want to also talk about submissions as well, you know, because it is also another path that you could potentially take. And and with us completing that self-publishing arc as well, this is actually going to open us up to something that you know, many of our listeners have asked about previously, which is bringing on more guests, authors, editors, various people in the horror community, publishers, reviewers. So I think you guys can probably expect some of that, you know, within the next couple months, for us to start gearing up to bring on some guests and pick their brains. That way you get a fresh perspective. And it's not just the same four guys repeating the same shit all the time, right? Is that fair, guys? What do you think?
That sounds like a good idea. Yes.
Sounds fair.
I think it's great.
All right, cool. So, guys, get ready for that then, you know, and we'll be, you know, beginning to announce guests as we move forward. But today, we've got an author spotlight, which we're going to be doing Matt Shaw, kind of the king of self-pub, and then of course our primary topic of the episode, submitting to submissions. But before we get into all that stuff, we're going to just introduce ourselves as we do for anyone new to the podcast. I'm Aaron Beauregard, now a three-time Splatterpunk Award-nominated author of such works as The Slob, Beyond Reform, my newest book, All Smiles Until I Return, and many others. And Daniel?
Daniel J. Volpe, I am a newly nominated Splatterpunk Award nominated author for Left to You and Talia. My new book, which should be coming out shortly after this airs, Only Psychos, should be coming out in March from D&T Publishing. And my vampire novella, Gift of Death, is out now in audiobook on Audible. So check it out. Roland Bercy.
Hi, everybody. Roland Bercy. I am a award-winning, not just nominated.
Oh, shit.
Son of a bitch.
He did it. He raw-dogged us. He raw-dogged us.
Award-winning author of Unfortion, Payback is a Witch, Pre-Thanksgiving Stress Disorder, and then I have two short stories, which are in two different Splatterpunk Award-nominated anthologies. I have one in Battered and Broken Bodies with Matt Shaw, called A Necromantic Love Story, and one in Baker's Dozen with Candace Nola, Homegrown Comeuppance, and Carver.
I'm Carver Pike, the non-award-winning author, but two-time Splatterpunk Award-nominated author. for The Maddening, Slaughterbox, the whole Diablo Snuff series, and my parasitic head lice story known as Scalp.
Sweet. Hey, but dude, you have an active nomination, so, you know, don't, the way you said it made it sound like you lost twice. Just to be clear, he hasn't lost the second time yet, but that'll be soon.
Yeah. Yeah, August 12th through 14th. Wow.
That's right. I'm working on my second loss. Yeah. Actively working on.
Well, I'm glad everybody got a nomination of some sort. As you know, the Splatterpunk's definitely something we look forward to. And I think we should do a cheers real quick, because our friend, our good friend of the show, Mort Stone, did get us these ridiculous muggery. I don't know where he got the fucking jail photo of Dan Volpe on there, but it's incredible.
Jail. It's from jail.
Oh, it's the jail. Oh, it's a jail one.
Yeah.
What did you say, Daniel? Don't fuck with the bald, short grappler champ.
What is it?
Yeah, grappling champ.
Mine when says the pretty bull sperm milker.
That's accurate. It's very accurate.
What does yours say, Ed? Era?
Bizarro porn star, am I wearing pants today?
That's what it says. Oh, that's a classic picture. What about yours, Roland?
The gentleman vampire Liberci.
Ah, very nice.
That's awesome. Whoa.
Thank you, Mort.
Yeah, thanks. We appreciate so much,
Mort. Also, a big thank you to everyone that did vote for us for the Splatterpunk Awards, because none of us would have a fucking nomination if it weren't for the readers and people that took the time out of their day to send that email to vote. You know, it's a big deal to us. You know, this is our world, yeah, and the genre we write in. And, you know, for all the readers and listeners and everything, we wouldn't be shit without you guys. So I'll cheers to all the readers, the voters, the listeners, everybody out there that got us to where we are for those awards. We appreciate it. And hopefully, you know, Written and Red can take some hardware home this year. So thank you, everyone.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you, guys. And I think it goes without saying that not only do these, you know, these awards, of course, are an honor just because this is the stuff that we love to do, you know, so it's always going to be a personal honor. But on a professional level, these awards also really help us gain more traction and visibility with readers, and they help our careers advance. Particularly for someone like me who is writing full time right now, this kind of stuff is like critical. So I just really do want to say thank you. I know it's a pain in the ass to send these emails, and you guys are all very busy, and you're going out of your way to do something for us. So we really appreciate it.
Very much.
Yeah, man.
But let's get on to the fun stuff now. Matt Shaw, ladies and gentlemen. And I think I'm going to – Roland Bercy is going to talk a little bit about, and I'm going to also – we're all going to chime in, I think. But I will say also we're going to see if we could try and get Matt to make an appearance on the cast with us, hopefully a little closer to our collaboration release of Survivor's Guilt. He is doing a lot of work with like films and stuff right now, so he's incredibly busy. But you know, I'll just try and send him a dick pic or two and see if
he'll love that.
We can't make it happen, you know?
Yeah.
He prefers booty pictures, but you do what you need to do.
Like spread or closed?
Spread.
All right, I'm just checking.
There's not even an introduction necessary. Everybody knows the man, the legend, Matt Shaw. I can't tell you how many books of his that I've read and how he has inspired me to actually start writing. He was one of the first people that I started reading. And from there, I just learned about other authors in the genre.
Roland, not to interrupt you, but like when you read Matt's book and you were just like, wow, this is selling. If he can fucking do it, anybody can. Is that what you said?
Nah, I did not.
You already got your payment from the anthology. Who cares?
He's trying to get me in trouble.
Talk that shit now.
No, come on. You know Matt's the greatest shit talker of them all, so he's good. He'll appreciate this.
So I actually got to hang out with him at KillerCon when it was live last time, 2019. And we had a blast. I can't tell you, I read so many of his books, How Much 2, Bastards. The list goes on and on, but the man is phenomenal. He is at the top of his rank in self-publishing, which is vital for us. In addition, he's got movies out. I saw both of his movies. He has one called Monster and also one called Box. And you can find both of those on Amazon. They're amazing. I mean, Box had me, I had to write a review on that one. I'm not good with reviews, but after I watched it, I was like, oh, this is fucking badass. So if you guys haven't had a chance to check out any of Matt's stuff, please make sure you do, because you're doing yourself a disservice if you haven't. The man is a genius.
Yeah, and I think Roland, he has another movie too, actually. They Came from the Sky. We saw them. And I think he did also a Friday the 13th sort of tribute film as well. So he's done quite a bit. And he's getting ready to premiere the release of Chained, I think, in a bit. Or I don't know if he was still filming Chained. But he's continuously working on film projects, which is fucking awesome. That just tells you, he sort of used his publishing as a vehicle to propel himself into film. And it's like, you know, he has that mentality that there's no mountain too tall, you know, and he just does what the fuck he wants, you know, which is, it's awesome, dude. And I read How Much Too as well. That was the book of his that I read. And I really enjoyed that. The variety of characters. I like those sort of scenarios where there's a lot of people in a strange situation that might have to do disturbing things. Those are always super fun.
Matt is actually nominated this year as well for Splatterpunk. I think he has two nominations, one for novella, which
Was it Cumshot that got?
I think it was Roll of the Dice.
Oh yeah, it was Roll of the Dice.
Which Talia is going to just shit on that. So sorry, Matt. But then I think the anthology you guys are in, right? Battered Broken Bodies, got a nomination as well.
Yeah,
so
that's
best of luck to him in the Splatterpunk Awards too this year. I hope I beat you that way.
Roll of the Dice is actually really good too. I don't know if you guys know. It's like almost like a choose your own adventure extreme horror book.
Yeah,
instead of going to a certain page, you roll the dice. Whatever number the die land on is where you go next. That is. I used to love Choose Your Own Adventure. So when I saw it, I was like, "Oh, I have to have this." Excellent.
Yeah,
he's good.
He's super creative.
Yeah, he's good at stepping outside the box and doing ideas. You know, that's an interactive idea. I've also seen him. He had a card game too. That he came up with this or that, right? And then also. He wrote a whole fucking book by hand and published it recently. He does like cartoons of stick figures being murdered and whatnot, like, and then writes like short stories to them, little pocketbooks. Really he's spread all over the place as far as different types of content. It's really cool.
It's insane how he even has the time. I don't know where
his mind must go, like a million miles an hour, man. It's like
that's exactly. Yeah.
But he's so cool and down to earth too. Like when I first talked to him, I had never spoken to him before. The last Splatterpunk when they released like the nominees for the last Splatterpunks, mm-hmm. and I reached out to him just to say hey and congratulations and stuff, and we were both nominated. And we just started like chatting and stuff, and he's so cool and down to earth. And I was gonna say though, man, he does have a hell of a sense of humor. One of the messages I asked him a question about something to do with genres or something like that. I was trying to find the message and I can't find it on my phone, but his reply was something like, "Yeah, I wrote a book once about fucking your mom and dad," or something like that. I was like, "What the fuck?" Like yeah, that's just a sense of humor, though. You know, you just roll with it and keep going.
Yeah.
One thing I will say too that he's fairly well known for is his covers, and we've talked about cover art and stuff in the past. And you could tell a Matt Shaw book because he always had it in just black. It was a black cover with white writing, and it said "fucking warning" on the bottom of it. And I mean, not all of his books are like that, but a good portion of them at one point in time were just that cover. And you could be scrolling through your Kindle or on Amazon, and you'd see that cover and you knew it was a Matt Straw book. Like, it was just identifiable. And you see people try to imitate it and stuff, but they just, it's just not the same. Like, Matt just, you know, just the way it is, he has that down.
Well, I think, go ahead, Roland, sorry.
Oh, I was going to say, it's crazy how such a simple cover could be so impactful. Like you said, you look at it and you know who it is and what you're going to get when you open up the pages.
Yeah, oh yeah. I mean, the titles are usually indicative of what you're going to get, too. Where, yeah, you know, well, Sick I Fox. And...
it's funny because I remember seeing, okay, and I want to throw this out there because we've got a lot of people who are aspiring authors that listen to this. And readers should really follow Matt, too, but aspiring authors follow Matt. And I'm not saying reach out to Matt and harass Matt and bombard him with questions. I'm saying, like, follow him because he offers a lot of helpful tips within comments that he posts and different posts that he makes. For example, that book that you were talking about, what was it, Sick Bastards? That was his first one, right?
I think Sick Bastards was, if it wasn't the first, it was very early on.
So I'm pretty sure that was the one he was talking about, but because somebody was talking shit about the cover of the book.
I remember.
It was something along the lines of, like, oh, you know, that cover, like, doesn't matter how good it is, like, that cover's garbage or something. And, you know, he very politely and just sort of broke it down, and he was like, well, you know, this book actually, like, sold, you know, 10,000 copies or something, you know what I mean? Like, amount of time. Yeah. Like, it literally, like, that book exploded. And he wrote it, I think he said he wrote it as a joke, almost like you were saying, Daniel, when you first wrote Billy Silver, like, you were just writing it to write it and see what it would be like. And he didn't expect it to take off, and it opened up a career path from what I recall him writing, you know what I mean? That he maybe didn't even expect. And he kind of just educated the person on, you know, why that... You know, you don't have to like the cover. He's not saying you have to like it, but understand that there's a reason for it, and that he actually, like, maybe he didn't even intentionally know that that was going to be the case, but it's something he discovered. And that's what I'm saying with authors. Like, there's things that he drops out there that you could, if you pay attention, you know, you don't need to actually, like, reach out to someone to understand and gain knowledge. He's actually very, like, forthcoming and share stuff a lot.
And he doesn't have to. Like, he recently posted, and I think it was Books of Horror, he posted that, what is it that you're always joking about? The is it Fans Only that we always joke about?
OnlyFans.
OnlyFans.
He put a post up in Books of Horror how he was so tired of, you know, he creates these books, and some of the covers alone, he knows that he will never be able to promote that on Facebook. Like, just the cover alone is going to get it shut down. And he's going to have a hard time advertising and stuff. So he created, like, an OnlyFans page because he knows that he can put pretty much whatever he wants to on there and promote it to a crowd and stuff on there. And, I mean, he wrote this long post on there about how he could see that being the new avenue for authors and stuff, a new playground kind of for authors to go and be able to promote their work and stuff without, you know, being shut down all the time by Facebook and all the other social media giants and, you know, stuff like that. And that he even thought, as we, a lot of us do, that it's mostly for porn and shit like that, but there, it can be used in other ways, you know, to help a lot of us and stuff like that. I mean, he didn't have to go on there and post that, you know what I mean? Okay. He could have kind of kept it a secret and just kind of fed it to his readers and stuff like that. But I mean, that's the kind of knowledge that he does drop like that. That's useful to all of us, you know?
Yeah.
He's ahead of the curve on a lot of stuff, and he's a trendsetter. Which is why you should watch him, you know?
Yeah.
And not only that, he writes awesome stuff, and he's entertaining, and, you know, he's a great member of the horror community, I think. And, he opened, you know, and this is why I kind of, we had that earlier episode where we were talking about, you know, the etiquette in approaching people, you know, and sort of seeking out advice. And, like, I want to thank Matt because he actually, like, opened the door for me, you know what I mean? Like, on one of my posts when I was asking some questions, he saw it, and he basically opened the door. He gave me, like, an answer to my question, and he said, I said, man, thank you, you know, for taking the time to answer that. And he's like, you know, don't be afraid to ask, like, if you need something, you know what I mean? Yes. Like, he basically said that, and then that lets you know, you know, okay, now I can message him. I'm not, you know, you want to pick the right time, too. You don't want to message him for something fucking stupid. You want to make sure it's like a legitimate question that hopefully you need help with. And you know, I think that's a good way to approach it. You all right there, buddy?
Fuck you laughing at Carter.
I just keep waiting for Aaron to yell, "Remix!" He's got the fucking DJ headphones and the fucking beanie on and shit.
Carter, we're having a serious conversation.
I wasn't done sucking Matt's dick yet. Come on.
Yeah, he's got to lick the balls.
You're going to gargle his balls a little bit too while you're at it?
No, but I mean, I'm in all seriousness, though, that makes sense, right? Like, I'm not saying don't message your idols or people that you look up to or respect, but it really, like, if you can create your own brand to where it's in a place where, you know, that person maybe takes notice, then that's sort of a sign, and that's an organic relationship from there. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's not forced, and you'll feel more comfortable in that relationship, I think, moving forward. Yeah. And actually, networking is going to be a big discussion on our follow-up episode, so it kind of ties in. But
yeah, sure.
Just want to say thanks, though, Matt.
Oh, I got to throw one more thing out there. I don't know if you guys, well, a lot of you guys probably know, another thing he capitalized on, Etsy. You can go on Etsy and get personalized books from Matt, which is, I did that quite a while back, and it was excellent. And in addition to a lot of his other stuff that you can't find on Amazon. So he was another one who found a different way to be able to promote himself and grow as an author via Etsy.
Yeah, I've looked at his Etsy too, and it's awesome. He has all different kinds of cool stuff.
Yeah,
he does like picture books too. He did a book about his dog. All different stuff, dude. And he's always like, he thinks of stuff too, like from a convention perspective. Like I'll often hear him say stuff about like, oh, you know, like I think this would be a good idea for like a title and a concept for a book, because this would pop at a convention. Somebody would walk by and they grab it when they see this sort of thing, even if they don't know who you are or what you do as a writer. So like, you know, he's kind of got his hand in different baskets and sort of covering a lot of bases with the content that he tries to produce, you know?
Very nice.
But yeah, that's Matt Shaw. And I think, so again, check out all the aspiring authors, you know, definitely take a look and make sure you follow him, buy some of his work so you can see what a successful self-published author is putting out. And then watch what he says, because you know, you don't even need to ask him questions. You know, you could learn a lot just by watching his posts.
And, awesome.
And then be sure to check out Matt's Etsy. Check him out on Amazon, where he has a massive catalog. But if you guys want like the signed stuff and the more unique stuff, check out Etsy for sure.
Awesome.
Cool. All right. So that's our author spotlight. And now, transitioning from the god of self-publishing, Matt Shaw, we're going to be talking about submitting to submissions. Oh. But, right, you know, there's different reasons to submit. You know, not all of them, they don't all have to be bad. But I think from my perspective, you know, because we're going to open up by talking about some of the pros of submitting your work to publishers and to anthologies, like what some of the pros would be. And then we'll talk about some of the cons. But I mean, we've talked about this a little bit before, I think on our like one of our very early episodes. But I think the pros can be obviously exposure, right? We've talked about that, because when we're, you know, just breaking it down from a high level, self-publishing is cradle to the grave exercise, right? We're responsible for coming up with the concept, putting it into format, you know, printing the PDF, uploading it to Amazon, cover art, editing, everything, right? The cradle to the grave, we're doing it. Whereas when we're submitting a piece of work, a novel, novella, or an anthology, there's a lot of that slack that's picked up, right? So obviously, like, the editing you would hope would be taken care of, you know, the cover, the formatting maybe even to some extent. You know, usually they'll ask for a certain format, and we'll talk a little bit about that in a minute. But some of the pros are that, you know, that work is going to be done for you. And as a result, you know, you're really just story focused, right? And trying to get that content together. But what do you guys think are some pros that you can think of for, you know, submissions process?
I mean, you know, like you said, Aaron, the exposure thing is it's huge for a lot of people. And, you know, you get into an anthology with a couple of authors that carry a bigger name than you. You know, people will pick those books up just for that author. And then in the interim, they might discover your story and then realize that you have a back catalog. One of the big things for submissions, especially for short stories that I feel, and I know it was like that for me, is validation. Validation that somebody is putting their time, money, and effort into your work and saying that you're good enough. You know, that's not the be all end all, but in reality, a lot of people like that. We like to have that validation that somebody else enjoys our work. That's why all these sites like Amazon have abilities to rate things, because it gives validation. So I definitely think that that is a good point for that. The exposure is nice, and most of these anthologies do pay, and I'm sure we're going to touch on payment as well. So payment is another plus in that scenario. With short stories, especially, because I think, you know, I'm kind of touching more on that. It's a little difficult, unless you're putting something on Godless, to publish just one short story on Amazon, because Amazon has their limit is 99 cents. You can't put things permafree on Amazon anymore, I don't believe. So if you have this 5,000 word short story, and like, I really want to get this out to the world, you really have no avenue unless you go to Godless or submit it into an anthology to make it part of a bigger collection. And that way you can get it out into the world for more eyes to see. What do you think there, Roland?
I've never really submitted to anyone. The couple of anthologies I'm in so far, I've been asked to be in them because I'm that good.
He gets one nomination.
He's on a fucking roll tonight, isn't he?
Cocky motherfucker.
But and I have another one that somebody's asked me to be in, and I'm going to do it. Hi, Don. But I don't know. I because I've never done it, I don't know the entire process of it. I do love self-publishing myself because I like the whole process. I like doing the artwork and the editing. Well, I won't say I don't like the editing part, but I like finding the artwork and, you know, just setting the whole book up myself. So I like publishing myself because of that. I would probably be interested in submitting stuff because I can see how, first of all, getting payment up front would be a huge, you know, thing. And then also, like you said, Daniel and Aaron, the exposure because of being in an anthology with some other names, you know, that readers might know and somehow be introduced to my stories through that anthology. Carver, have you ever
submitted to like anthologies and stuff? I have, and I was going to say, kind of like you, I haven't really submitted much lately.
Yeah.
Not because I'm so good. The opposite, in fact. And I've seen a lot of people recently talking about this online, like how they've submitted and they're down or they're depressed and stuff because they just haven't been picked up for an anthology and stuff like that. And I went through that a lot. I have submitted to certain things in the past and did not get picked up for it. In fact, I've been turned down by people who have, you know, recently reached out and asked me to be parts of anthologies and stuff like that, who turned me down before. And I think I just chose not to submit to that, you know, to anthologies and stuff like that for a while. I just decided to go my own pace, my own route, do my own thing. So I did want to kind of put that message out there to people because, like I said, a lot of people are getting kind of down about it, that it happens to everybody. You got to, if you do want to be parts of anthologies and stuff and you do want that exposure, you do have to keep trying with it. Or do what I did and put your stuff out yourself, man. Put your own collections and shit together. If you do get to the point where you are tired of being turned down and stuff, put your shit out yourself, man. you don't always have to wait for other people, you know, to put your stuff out for you. So, what were you going to say?
No, finish, please.
Okay, so that's one thing that I was going to say. But one of the benefits, because that was the first question that was asked about submitting, though, I think. And I think we can go beyond a little bit just anthologies, though. Right now, everything that I have is self-published. It's all indie published. I don't have anything that's with a publisher at all right now, I don't think. Yeah, nothing of mine is with a publisher right now. I know you guys, I know Daniel, you have some stuff that's self-published, right? And you are with D&T and got other stuff in the works. Yep. Aaron, everything yours is self-published right now, right?
Outside of the occasional anthology, you know, like I'm in some, I have short story. Yeah, it's all anthologies, though. It's all anthology stuff.
The point that I was going to make, and this is, I've been listening a lot to like the horror show with Brian Keene, like the old episodes and stuff. And one thing that I've noticed a lot that I hear a lot from these, from, you know, Brian Keene and a lot of the other horror authors and stuff he's had on there is kind of like the need to, not put all your eggs in the same basket and to diversify your portfolio kind of in a way, you know. And Daniel, I know you're doing a good job with that because, like I said, you've got your stuff published yourself, but you have some stuff with D&T. I'm not doing that at all. Like, I've got everything myself self-published, but I think there is a benefit to having some stuff with, you know, spreading it out to a couple different publishers and not necessarily going all with one publisher because, as many of our friends found out, I'm not going to name any names, but with, you know, a couple different publishers recently went under, and a lot of authors found themselves fucked, basically. I mean, suddenly out of the blue, all their books were just, bam, just taken down from Amazon because the publishers went under. Mm-hmm. And that happened a lot in the past. I mean, even an interview with Ed Lee, and he was talking about one of the publishers going under and how, you know, it kind of caught him off guard and stuff back in the day. I mean, it's been going on forever with these, you know, especially with the smaller publishing houses and stuff. So it is kind of smart sometimes to spread, you know, to use more than one small publishing house and stuff. So I think that is a benefit of submitting to more than one, if that makes sense.
And look at what happened with Necro. It wasn't even that they went under. Their owner died. He was killed in a car accident. And, you know, that wasn't a failure on anybody's part. Obviously he was killed in a horrific accident. So those authors then found themselves scrambling. And then I think they had issues with, you know, getting rights back and going through some of the legal stuff to make sure that things were taken care of. And obviously this poor guy was killed in a tragic accident. So
yeah,
you
know, I mean,
you find yourself in that, especially when we talk about the small publishers, like Simon & Schuster's not going under because they have, you know, boards of people, but you get a small indie press where it's one person, maybe two people, and something tragic happens like that, and you're the author, one of their authors, you find yourself in a situation that, you know, you don't want to be in.
Well, that goes back to the diversifying too, right? Because it'd be one thing if you had one or two books with them out of your 16, but let's say you had 12 or 14 with them, and then that happens, and then suddenly you're not getting, you're full-time at this point or something, and suddenly you're not getting paid. You know, and then look at that. So to me, I think, like, I want to keep the majority of my work self-published, and then I will sprinkle out little things here and there. One little thing. Yeah. For me, it's probably going to be like a once a year thing. You know, like I might do one, tops two collaborations a year, maybe. And then, you know, maybe eventually I will do like something with a publisher, very sporadic though, because I want to, because I'm more focused on brand building personally and continuing to give my readers something to expect with releases. They know it's coming from me. They know my hands are on these merchandise bundles that I'm creating and that they're going to get good customer service and it's going to show up. You know what I mean? Like, I'm in control of all that. And I think that to some extent that they appreciate that, you know what I mean? So,
this goes back to, picking your publisher. Like, some people are so they just want to get published somewhere and they want to put something out, and they could end up with a subpar publisher where that publisher doesn't have your best interest in mind. They slap like clip art covers on your books and they do a poor job editing it. So like Aaron said, he likes the self-publishing aspect because he controls everything. But if you work with a good publisher that you can be close with and open with, you'll have that ability as well, to an extent, to pick and choose what you do. So, you know, when we talk about like free anthologies and just submitting to get your stuff out there, it's the same thing with a publisher. If you just want to publish, you know, with somebody just to get your book out there, that's fine. But just remember, if you don't do your homework and you don't research them, talk to some of the authors, look up their catalog and see who they've published in the past. Are there books you've even heard of? And if they are, you know, maybe reach out to one or two of their authors and just ask, like, hey, how do you like working with this person or this company?
See, now I'm curious though, because I was just talking about diversifying and using more than one publisher. For these small publishers, a lot of times you create really good friendships with these people. I mean, you talk to them all the time. You know what I mean? They're in our circle. We talk to them on Facebook and social media all the time and stuff, you know. I'm sure, for example, with Don, with D&T, Daniel, you guys talk all the time. You've built up a friendship, I'm sure. So I'm just curious, and not to put you on the spot with Don. I mean, it doesn't even have to be you that answers, but it's just a question I'm throwing out there. I'm curious, with these smaller publishers, though, would they understand the need to diversify? Like, if you put out your next book, for example, and you decided you just wanted to go self-publishing with it, you just wanted to remain in control of your next book, I wonder, and you don't even have to answer this, but I just wonder how she'd feel about that, or how these small publishers would feel, or would they be butthurt and say, like, well, hell, you don't want to give me your next book, you know what I mean? Like, would people feel upset with the fact that, you know, hey, I published his last book, why wouldn't he want to give me his next one? And that's one of the concerns that because right now, I have control of all my books. Faces of Beth is done for the most part. Like I said, I'm just tinkering with it, just trying to, you know, fixing some things up with it. I'm still trying to decide. I have, you know, talked to a couple smaller publishers. I'm still trying to decide what I want to do with it, if I'm going to publish it. I may just decide to publish it myself and come out with it next month. Or I might, you know, decide to pitch it at PitMad next time on Twitter and, you know, see what can happen with that. I don't know what I'm going to do with it yet. I'm still, you know, weighing options, and just, it's the first time in a long time that I've actually really wanted to see what I could do with a book instead of just jumping at the chance to just do it myself like I usually do. So that, a lot of questions are coming into my mind. That is a question I've had. If I do go with a small publisher, are they going to now expect me to want to give all my books to them? Because I may decide the next one I want to do myself, or go with a different publisher with the next one, but keep that one with them. You know what I mean?
So I don't have a problem answering this, because Dawn and I have talked a lot, and we talk all the time, like you said. And the reason why I stick with D&T is Dawn is a friend of mine, and I don't think that she would ever want to do anything to adversely affect me or my career. And we've talked about it in the past. It's not a secret. I have a book coming out with Death's Head in May. I've done anthologies before. I've self-published before. And I've pretty much told her that, you know, I try to, if I'm going to do something with somebody else, you know, a solo project especially, I give her a heads up and to say, hey, you know what? I'm thinking about exploring this. She knows. She's not stupid, but she's a friend of mine. So like I said, even if I came out and said, hey, you know what, I'm going to self-publish this book, and this book, I don't think she would care. She might want it because she enjoys it and enjoys the process and enjoys reading my stuff. But I don't think if I came out and I said, hey, you know what, I'm going to do – this publisher has a very specific theme that their books are, you know, based around, and I have an interest in that, so I'm going to write a solo novella for them. I don't foresee her getting mad about that, because that's really not the type of person. She – takes very good care of her authors, and in reality, I'm not gonna obviously talk contract stuff, but things I've seen that she gives is above and beyond what others have given out. So it's been nothing but great to work with. So
I think that's go ahead, Roland, sir.
I was going to say, so Daniel, when working with D&T Publishing or any other publisher, do you find that you miss the whole process of the self-publishing aspect as far as doing the cover art and so forth and so on? Or is it just much easier for you and you just trust D&T to take care of you in that aspect?
So I can say this, about D&T, because she's really the only one I've really worked with. Dawn is super, super receptive to the authors. And when I say that, I mean, we have direct contact with the cover artist. She comes to me and says, what are you thinking for a cover? You know, the book does not get published with a cover unless I approve the cover. So that's how in-depth she likes it. She wants to make sure, like I said, she truly takes care of the authors. And she tells me, if you do not 100% love this, tell me and Webb will pay and we will have it changed. And that's how in-depth she goes. Editing, same way. I am the one to make the final edits. I get it back from the editor, direct contact with the editor. I am the one at that point to send it back to her and say, okay, it is to my liking, to my standards, it's done. You know, what I believe is done.
Nice.
So really, she is not, if you see a book of mine that comes out from D&T, just know that, you know, that cover art, everything in it is, you know, a lot of my hand and hers.
Oh, no.
And, of course, fucking Don Noble, who's a goddamn cover wizard.
Oh, yeah.
Yo, Don's ill. But I think we should really state this, too, because it's a coin flip, really. You don't know. Daniel has a favorable relationship and a friendship with the publisher. That's not going to be the case probably the majority of the times. It's probably going to be more transactional. It might not be like a friendship, you know what I mean?
Right.
I mean, I don't know the numbers on it, you know, but I'm just saying it's probably a coin flip, right? It could go either way. You could end up creating a relationship with the publisher, or it could be a very transactional thing. You know what I mean? Like, I've heard all other authors speaking about, you know, submitting one thing and then they submit a second, you know, that gets published, then they submit a second book and that gets rejected. They just, you know, they didn't like the story. Don't think you're in some kind of relationship, like when you're entering this, you know. Right. I approach it, I look at it, this is business. And I do, while I do like consider, you know, certain people to be friends as well that are in the business, at the end of the day, you got to be making those decisions that are best for your business. And if the people that you're working with can't see that diversifying and having your eggs in different baskets, you know, is something that most authors are going to want to do, then, and they're making a problem over it, then it might be time to step away from that relationship and think about, you know, maybe looking for different publishers.
Aaron,
go ahead.
I just want to touch on one thing you said before I forget. What you said, I think, is very important about, you know, you're not in a relationship with them. You may be, you may not be, but as an author, if you do get signed with a small press or anyone, don't expect them to automatically just pick up your next book because you wrote it. You know, they might have a really big, you know, queue set up with people. They might not have room for
Sometimes
you.
Sometimes those things are years. They go for years in advance.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely. That's
true. The calendar is fucking. Sometimes they got years of fucking calendars already set up.
So don't think just because they publish one book, they're going to publish all of your books. So it goes both ways for the publishers not to get upset if the authors try to diversify a little bit. And again, it's always nice to have that, like, that home base. You know, I love working with D&T. I don't see myself I see myself publishing with them at least every year, if not one book, two books maybe. Do I see myself spreading it out in the future? Yeah, possibly, as I start to get a little more of a following and I start to want to reach out to other publishers for specific things. But again, don't just think because you wrote one book for somebody that they're going to publish everything.
Right. And that, but
rejection is a huge part.
And what we're saying though goes both ways. Right. And that's why, back to Carver's question, this is business, right? You know, like you don't own me just because I gave you one book. And I'm not saying, and this has nothing to do with D&T or Dawn. This is just me speaking in general. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, just to be clear about that, this has nothing to do with that. It's just, I think, like you said, Carver, if there was a friendship that built there and that was expected, that, you know, that just doesn't add up. You know what I mean? And I think, I think.
Well, because, you know.
Oh, go ahead.
Sorry, I stumbled over you.
No, it's cool, dude. It's all good.
I was just going to say that as an indie, you know how it is as an indie author. Hell, we have KillerCon coming up in August. I might want a certain fucking book out by KillerCon. I might say, you know, write this book. I'm going to start writing it right now, and I will have it published before KillerCon.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's my goal. I want this book out, and I want to have it on my table at KillerCon or something like that. You know what I mean? Then I'm going to make sure I get it done. If I go through any publisher, the chances of that getting out by August are pretty slim.
Yeah.
I mean, the process just doesn't allow for it. I mean, you got to figure, you got to go through the editor, the cover artist. I mean, just the regular release schedule and all the, you know, the blog tours and all the stuff you need to set up for it. I mean, there's certain stuff that you can do indie that you can't do through a publisher that just aren't going to happen. So,
yeah, no, that's a great point because, you know, like Aaron's on his own schedule. He knows when his books are coming out because he puts them out. For me, especially now with my next couple coming out from D&T, there are other authors in that imprint, in that publisher. So they are focused not just on me. You know, they're spreading it out. So I know that. Like in March, I have a book coming out through D&T, and then September and December. Those books are all well. One of those books is already done, so the book that's coming out in September is already done. And if I was self-publishing it, I could get it out tomorrow if I really wanted to. But because I want to go through the publisher, I am allowing it to be put on hold and to wait it out and follow their schedule. And like Carver said, if I wanted to have that out by KillerCon, I could. I could have it out probably, you know, within a couple weeks if I really wanted to, but I'm choosing to stick with the publisher in this aspect. And some of the other stuff, like self-published things, like the sequel to Talia or Awakened in Blood, I'm going to put that out on my own because I already started that process with those books.
Yeah, and I think I'll go back. I gave a talk for a friend of mine at his Masonic Lodge a little while ago, a few weeks ago. So I was talking about a lot of this, about you know, sort of given an overview of publishing in the beginning, and you know, what's the path of self-publishing, small press, large press, just kind of breaking it down so they have a general idea at the beginning of the talk. And I said that my three keys to success were consistency, control, and kindness. Okay, and consistency is huge in what we're just talking about here, because we want to have a consistent release schedule. We want to keep people coming back for more and continue to satisfy their appetite. We in self-publishing, we get the ultimate control, right? Because we have control over everything. And ultimately, if the product succeeds or fails, that's all on our shoulders, because it's literally our child, right? And we've done every single element of it. And then obviously with kindness, you want to make sure you're appreciative and that you're not being a fucking dickhead on the internet, you know, so that your readers can stand by you and be like, feel good about supporting you. Nobody wants to support a fucking dickhead. Okay.
Yeah.
So
cuckery.
Yeah. Too much cuckery. But going back. So the point of what I'm trying to say here is that to the aspiring author or the author early in their career that is watching this show, is that in my opinion, the best way to sort of advance in your career is to begin building a brand with yourself. You can hope to gain success by submitting away and associating yourself with a brand that's somewhat popular, or you can be consistent, right, and control everything and develop your own brand. But at that point, like you said, if something happens, you know, with your self-publishing, you also want some diversifying. And I think that as you establish your own brand and build your own brand, then the good publishers, they'll come to you. Make no mistake about it, okay? If you're proven that you can sell books, people are sharing your stuff, you're not being a fucking tool bag on the internet, and you're approachable, then they will come to you, and you can forget about submitting to submissions in general. You won't even have to do it, because they're just going to say, we want to work with you. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think, so my point is that to the aspiring author, that would be, if I could suggest anything, that would be my suggestion. Keep writing those books and being consistent and building your audience, being a cool person, and then you'll get the diversifying will come. And I'm not saying I've submitted to, like, you know, an anthology here or there or whatever, you know what I mean? Like once in a while. But I think consuming so much of your time with formatting and submitting to these things you know, can be a waste in some ways.
Yeah, and that's another thing too, when you talk about formatting, submission, read the submission guidelines, and I'm sure all my editors and publishers will thank me for this fucking PSA. But yeah, people get upset because I've helped to read for anthologies before, and I'm no editor, and this was just literally, you know, reading the stories to help. There have been stories that I've got had submitted and they're in the incorrect format. Their email header is wrong. They're using a weird fucking font. They're, you know, there's a lot of things that people are very particular about. So when there's a submission call, very importantly, go on, check it out, and say, hey, can I do this, you know, fit these parameters? You know, it, most of it is New Times New Roman, size 12 font, double spaced. That is it. In a Word doc, docx, PDF, whatever. But follow the submission guidelines. You will get an automatic rejection without them even opening your email if they get it. Because even free anthologies are getting slammed with submissions. You know, so if there's a paying, especially a professional rate anthology, they are getting hundreds and hundreds of short story submissions. So it's very easy for them to weed yours out right away if you don't follow the submission guidelines. So it behooves you to do that. Read the guidelines.
I'm sure they'll blacklist you. Like if you send something that's, you know, all out of format and not what they're asking. And I get it. Like, you might be wondering, like, oh, why does it matter what font it's in this? Well, it's like when you're taking 25 stories out of different Word documents, it becomes a lot of other work. And sometimes there's stuff embedded in your font and stuff like that that could fuck up the formatting of the template they're trying to transfer it to. So believe it or not, it may sound stupid, but it can actually create a lot of nuisance and annoyance for someone who's putting that together. And even if your story's good, they're just not going to want to, they're not going to want to fuck with it, you know?
Well, and this goes back to the branding thing as well, because these people are going to see that, like, you're not even willing to take the time to read the guidelines and follow the guidelines. So they might not want to work with you because you weren't, you know, they might, like Aaron said, you might get blacklisted in that because they might not even want to work with you because you didn't follow the rules. Now, everybody else followed the rules.
Yeah. And on the other hand, though, you know what I hate, though, is when I used to, I don't really read for submissions anymore. Like, the first year I was writing, I read quite a few. And here's a note to publishers. When a publisher puts up a submission and is accepting stuff, don't be a fucking dickhead. Don't sound like an asshole, you know? A lot of them will be like, oh yeah, you know, if you can't follow simple directions, this and that. It's like you're getting chewed out by your fucking... Yeah, it's condescending shit. And it's like, listen, I understand that, like, you don't want to get these submissions in that format, but it's like, do it professional. Be a fucking professional. Because you know what? When I see that, I'm not fucking with you. So maybe that's a note to the publishers on that one. I don't care for that very much. Treat people with fucking respect, dude. You know? Except Carver.
Yeah, fuck that dude.
Yeah, don't give me any respect.
But Carver, back to diversifying just for 1 second, and then I think we'll go back to formatting for a moment. But before I forget about this, because we talked about the horrible thing that happened with Necro, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. And that's a one-off bizarre sort of thing that's, you know, listeners might be listening to that and saying, oh, okay, that's probably not going to happen again. You know, it's such a bizarre one-off. But then, you know, like you said, it could be the publisher goes under. That might be a little more common. And then maybe something just as common too is, you know, publisher got canceled. We saw that recently too. They got canceled and, you know, that can fucking happen to anybody, you know? That's why it goes back to, you know, understanding who you're doing business with. Do you have a respect for that person as a person? And again, sometimes it may be smoke and mirrors. It may not really be something that's obvious, but that's the point of diversifying, right? It's like, if there is somebody that seemed like a great person to you and you kind of gave them the smell test and everything seemed okay, you know, you don't want to have 5 books going down in one shot if you only have 5 books. You know what I mean?
Under certain under a circumstance like that, if a publisher does go under, wouldn't you think that the rights for your book would revert right back to you? Isn't that usually in the contract?
It should be in the contract, and I'm not going to mention the publisher. One of them did go under recently, or they didn't go under. They were in the process of going under, and they were just not answering any of their author's emails. So they were not active, and a very good friend of mine had a book or two with them and told me, like, do not buy these books on Amazon because they're getting the royalties. Like, I haven't seen a royalty check in a year. And I know people are buying them because people are telling me they're buying them. So wow. Some publishers will just remain active, for lack of a better term, but not officially say, oh, we're done, we're closing the doors, and here's your rights back. Mm-hmm. So that's another thing you got to watch out for, is just those publishers that will just take your stuff and just eat royalties on it and not give you anything.
Or a lot of times in the contracts, it will say that, like, when you're done with that publisher, when you do get your rights back, you can have your story back, but you have to change the cover. You have to – there's certain stipulations and stuff like that. So sometimes when, like, a publisher goes under or whatever the situation is, these authors who may have never self-published before, they've only gone with this one small publisher, or it's their second small publisher or what have you, find themselves suddenly, and I've seen this a lot on Facebook recently in the comments and stuff, people are kind of freaking out saying, I haven't decided yet whether I'm going to self-publish or search for another publisher to take this on, but, you know, I have, my books are no longer on Amazon. I will be trying to put up, you know, find new covers for them, redoing the formatting or whatever it is, you know what I mean? Like doing some new editing on them and trying to get them back up as soon as possible. So just stay tuned. But you can tell everybody's pretty stressed out about it, as you would be if suddenly your books just disappeared from Amazon and they're back in your hands. But you know you need a new cover, and you know it's now up to you to either do it yourself, and you may have never done it yourself, or find somebody else willing to take a shot on a previously published book. And we know a lot of publishers won't touch a book that's already been published. So that is another setback sometimes is – a lot of the publishers out there will not handle previously published books. So that's the other situation. So,
mm-hmm. And so that's why it's always good, no matter, like, so if you are someone that is beginning your career with a lot of submissions, you should definitely simultaneously be learning the self-publishing process and getting yourself prepared, you know, so in the event that something happens that's out of your control, you could try and at least get some of your work back out. And again, that's why we're talking about diversifying and spreading sharing the wealth, right? Because if it all goes down in one shot and you got five books with a publisher, and then, like you said, Roland, yeah, the rights are probably going to be reverted back to you, unless it's the bizarre circumstance that Daniel was talking about where they're just not answering emails for some reason.
Yeah.
That's stretching it out. But yeah, even if the rights revert back to you, it's going to take you time to get all that shit together and re-release it all, you know? And you've got to do it in a schedule. It's not like you could just release 3-4 books at once.
Yeah, that's a horrible idea.
Yeah. But, and one more time, I just say, if you are submitting and you're not getting accepted, yes, take a look at your work and see, you know, does it need some work? Is there something wrong with it? Is it grammatically correct? Are there errors and things like that? Obviously, you need to check into that stuff. But don't let yourself get down and depressed and stuff like that, because there's so many other pieces of the puzzle. First of all, who the fuck are these people? Who's the publisher? Mm. Are they anybody important? I mean, is it just somebody out there throwing an anthology together? They may not even be worth getting upset about. Everybody's putting a fucking anthology together, to be honest. So that's part A. I mean, is it somebody important enough for you to be upset about? I mean, don't get me wrong. There are a lot of great anthologies out there and editors putting them together. Also, what's the competition like? I mean, if you've got 13 authors being accepted to this and 8 of the people that are already in there are, you know, Stephen King, Bentley Little, you know. I mean, the competition is going to be tough, you know what I mean? So that's another part to it. I mean, think about how many authors, you know, hundreds of authors are submitting to this, and they're accepting 13. You know what I mean? Competition is pretty stiff.
So another thing. Oh, sorry. Go ahead. Finish up.
Go ahead, man. I don't know where I was going next.
Anyways, I was just going to say, some submissions also, they take a while if you're submitting a novel or a novella. So we talk about, you know, timeline. If you have a book and you're like, this is my baby, I want to get this thing out in the world, I'm going to submit it. It could take 6 months for them, depending on the publisher you're with, 6 months for them to even read the thing. And some publishers won't allow you to do simultaneous submissions, meaning you can't submit it to another publisher within that 6 months. So that book could be dying on the vine and be sitting there waiting for 6 months for them to get to it when you could have self-published it on your own. Yeah. Same thing with short stories. Short stories generally go quicker, but I will tell you this. I don't know how many you guys have, but I probably have hundreds and hundreds of rejection letters. You are going to get rejected. Like Carver said, a lot of these anthologies, they have 13 spots and they've invited 10 people already. And you think you're fighting for 13 spots, you're really only fighting for three. You know, a lot of times the open calls aren't really truly open calls. They already have people picked out and they're really letting, you know, trying to take the best top three stories to put in there. So it sucks getting rejection letters, and we've all got them and we get plenty of them. If you get a rejection with a little bit of critique, that's amazing. That's like an anomaly, because a lot of times you get a form letter, you know, that, sorry, at this time your story or book has not reached our criteria. So do not get dejected or upset if you get rejections. And if you are somebody that does not like the rejections, self-publish it.
And that's why I was saying too, like, that's why I think the best route is building your brand, then, you know, and letting them come to you once you establish yourself. And then you don't have to worry about submissions. It's a win-win. And going back to rejections, funny story, I guess, kind of a funny story. I got a rejection from a magazine publisher. And
Hustler?
I didn't really play girl. No, I didn't really understand that, like, etiquette or anything like that at that time, and I just I had it formatted properly and everything as they asked. Everything as far as that goes was good, but I just responded to the rejection, which I guess you're not supposed to do. I learned after that, but the guy was a real dick about it. He was like, you know, snubbed his nose at me and shit, and just like, yeah, you know, you're not supposed. I basically just said, you know, all right, well, thanks for your time and I appreciate it. And like, I'm going to buy the issue.
Fuck you.
And basically told me to go fuck myself. So, you know, if you guys want to avoid that, you know, you definitely, that's supposedly the etiquette. I mean, but you never know. I think Robert Essig, told a story about, you know, Necro Publications, and was it Dave, right? It was Dave, right?
Dave Barnett
that passed away. And he said that he went against the grain one time on that after he submitted it, and he just thanked him, you know, for doing that and stuff. And he said that Dave wrote him back like a long thing and told him, like, you know, if it was like 10 years ago when I was publishing all the like Ed Lee stuff, I would have accepted this, but it's just too like dark for this time. But Robert was saying, like, you know, how that was like a real important thing that happened to him, kind of like getting that message back from him and sort of getting some validation for his work from somebody he respected, you know? So it's like the industry standard is not to do that, because if everybody did that, their emails would be blown the fuck up. But it's like, you know, you have the anomalies like that story that I saw him mention online, which I think is kind of cool, yeah. You know? So,
Daniel, I'm curious, do you think that more of your self-published stories, do they get more easily noticed or more traction, like, and put in front of the public, or is it the ones that you are published through a publisher? Which do you see getting more, what's the word I'm looking for, like,
exposure?
Promotions, yes. Promotions.
Well, I mean, promotions is a whole nother show. You guys see me on Facebook constantly. I'm a fucking slave to my cell phone, and I love it because people are responding and they're enjoying my work. So, promotions, like I said, we'll get into that. That's a fucking other can of worms. I think all my books are promoted well, and that is, yes, my D&T books are promoted by Dawn and the Street Team readers that she does use. And then my self-published books, again, we talk about ads and promotions. I'll get more into that and how the strategy I use, and we'll go into that. But I think that, you know, promotion is really on the hands of both the author and the publisher. And if you're like Aaron and Carver and purely self-published, that everything's on you. So we'll talk more about that in another episode.
I was just curious. I wasn't trying to put you on the spot. I was just trying to see if you saw any kind of difference in one or the other getting more traction than the, that's all.
No, and I think it comes down to a couple of things. You know, my books, especially my D&T books, they have some really nice covers. And the same with my self-published books, especially Talia. Like, Talia gets a lot of traction just because of the cover. People are like, oh, shit. Like, I have a 7-foot banner of the Talia cover because that's an eye-catching cover. Mm-hmm. And Left to You, also, same thing. I've gotten a lot of traction, and people will stop their scrolling to look at that cover. So, again, when we get into, you know, promotion and stuff like that, we'll cover that more.
Okay. Just curious.
Yeah. No, good question. And so, all right, we've talked about pros and cons quite a bit. We've talked about formatting and submission etiquette quite a bit. Let's take the last 10, 15 minutes or so and talk about contracts, you know what I mean? Rates, returns, contracts, what's in a contract, things that you should be aware of. I mean, first and foremost, I think I can open it up by saying if you're submitting for work and you're trying to become a serious author, you need to be paid, okay?
Yes.
For your work. These publishing companies that aren't paying authors, not worth your time, because if they're not willing to pay the author, what the fuck are they investing into the book? What are they investing into the cover? What are they investing into the edit? They can't even fucking pay you.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's a red flag in my opinion. Also, you know, I just think that I mean, Shane McKenzie, I read an old Shane McKenzie interview some time ago, where he was talking about this exact thing and, you know, not getting paid for anthologies when he would submit stories. They'd get accepted and stuff. And he would always say, like, man, I don't know, why the fuck can't they pay us? Like, and basically he said, you know, it's because a lot of these companies weren't putting almost nothing into the actual production of the book. And they were and it doesn't really cost a whole lot, you know, to put the actual book out. Everyone else is doing the work for you. And then all the friends and family of these authors, right, they're all going to buy the books to support these authors that didn't get paid. So not only are they leeching off the authors, but they're sucking out from the family and the friends. And they're not even really promoting the book. They're just trying to do a cash grab on people associated with the book. So, I mean, that's a real thing. Things like that happen. You know what I mean? And, like, someone respected in this industry, like a Shane McKenzie talking about that, that just, you know, stuck in my head. But I think you got to be paid, right, guys? Like, what do you guys have to say about payment? And it's like most payment, honestly, like you're going to see a lot of shit payments too. Like, you know, probably like a lot, you'd be lucky to get like $25 in a contributor's copy, you know, like at the end of the day. It's like that's like good. And it's like, personally me, I'm not fucking with that anymore. You know what I mean? Like, unless it's for maybe like a close friend or something like that, you know, and they're trying to do something, get something launched off, I might do something like that. But for all my main anthologies, I'm going to be expecting to be paid like I'm working, because I'm working hard, and you shouldn't be afraid to be paid like you're working. So what do you guys have to say?
Those anthologies, and I've been, you know, I'll jump right in there with Shane. I've had that happen where I was in an anthology and I don't think I got anything for it. And I think I got a contributor copy, and I may have gotten $10 for it. No, yeah, but maybe something like that. It was like an ebook and a paperback.
I mean, it's almost more insulting, right? Like, oh, here's $10, kid. Go get a fucking Big Mac, you know, like.
And that's what it comes down to, the validation thing, because I was fairly new at it, and I'm like, you know, wow, this person is willing to invest in me and do this. But in reality, like you said, Aaron, it wasn't even – I don't think it was any money now that I think about it. And it was a contributor copy. The book looked like complete ass. It was like clip art fucking stupid cover. The stories weren't edited. They were formatted differently. It just wasn't professionally done, and that was shame on me. I should have done a little research, but I was so excited to see that acceptance letter. I was like, holy shit, I just got accepted for a story. This is amazing. I had to fucking scream into the heavens, and then I realized, like, oh, man, this is kind of like a scam almost, and
right. It takes away from it, right? It's almost like that validation that you felt. Like, yeah, it's still cool. You were in a book, but it's like, this thing's a fucking mess. Like, you're almost embarrassed to be associated with it. Like,
yeah, and that's why we see so many of the good ones out there. Like, it's a shame that some anthologies have gotten a bad reputation. And I feel like recently, the quality, good anthology, like from Evil Cookie. I mean, K. Trap Jones puts out some amazing stuff. He gets high quality authors. He pays professional rates. The guy is, you know, he knows what he's doing. Candace, obviously, the Baker's Dozen. A great job. I think RJ Rolls, he does some anthologies. Dawn at D&T. I know him. If you're Matt, obviously, with his, I mean, Battered Broken Bodies looks amazing. Okay. You know, obviously some great authors, except for Carver, you know. oh, you're not in that one right now. Me and you, we got shit on that one, but
yeah.
But it's that acceptance. You want to feel good about getting your story brought into an anthology, but you got to, Like Shane said in his interview, you just got to watch out where you sell your stuff to.
Hey, at least on the romance side, they're actually duping people into paying to be in anthologies.
Oh, my God.
At least on our side, we're just worried about not getting paid. But on the romance side, people are actually charging people to be in anthologies so that they can go on those list runs, you know, to try to make New York Times bestseller and USA Today. So they'll get like 20 authors together. Everybody chips in. You know, you can't even get in this anthology unless you pay $100 or whatever it is. And then they use all that money to buy the ads and stuff to try to go after like USA Today bestseller and shit like that. So they all know what they're doing. They're doing it for a reason, but you can't even get in unless you buy in $100 or some shit like that.
That's a whole different level of cuckery right there. Fucking, that's ridiculous.
Don't even get me started on that shit.
Yeah, that's insane.
It's disturbing. But I think okay. First thing that should be in your contract is a fucking payment. You know, and it's not, I'm not saying, like, I know a lot of people that are listening to this show are kind of in the early writing phases probably. But I mean, I think we have some people that are veterans too that may tune in occasionally. So hopefully you guys are getting the rates that you deserve. Now, but as far as people who are a little bit newer, I'm not saying like, oh, you wrote two short stories that haven't been published and you somehow you should be fucking granted $100 or whatever the fuck it is, you know, for your story in an anthology. Obviously, you have to work up to that level. But that's why I was kind of suggesting like brand building early on. That way, you know, it's the same thing. Anthologies will seek you out too. And then, you know, if they seek you out, they're probably not going to give you a rate that is insulting. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that should be less likely. So in your contract, right, you should usually, some of the things they talk about is obviously the rate. They're going to talk about how long the rights, you know, how long your rights are going to be with them, obviously. And I think usually for collections and things of that nature, you're looking at 6 to 12 months, 12 months being less common. Usually it's 6. But one thing to really look out for with that stuff is audiobook. Because a lot of times they'll slip in audio contracts and the Audible contract is 6 years. So it's like if you're giving up a short story that you think might actually be really suited for a collection of your own that you're going to put out, just really think about that, because you might not, if they're doing audio rights, it's 6 years automatic. Like, there's no in between with it, because ACX isn't flexible on their contract. You know, I believe it's six. It's either six or eight. I'm pretty sure
I think it's six.
Pretty sure it's six.
Because it's quite a while. And that's a good point too. Like watch your rights. And if you have questions, there's plenty of attorneys out there. There's plenty of other authors. When I got my first book contract, I reached out to other authors and I'm like, I don't know what I'm looking at. Can you look at this and make sure there's nothing funky? And you know, I had my friends who I trust, they looked at it and they said, yup, this is right where you want to be. Short story contracts are a little bit different than novel or novella, but you want to make sure, like Aaron said, protect your rights. Know how long they're gonna hang on to them for. Some publishers with short stories, I've worked with one and we've all worked with them before. They don't even use the contract. Like, yeah, man, like here's $50. Please don't publish it again for like 6 months or so. And yeah. And that's how they do business. And you know, it seems to work for them. You will normally get contracts for short stories. Just read it over. Most of them are usually boilerplates. They're pretty basic. If you start seeing weird language or like legal jargon that you don't understand, ask someone. Even ask them. Be like, I don't understand this. What does it mean? You know, get clarification. Email is great because everything's time stamped. So have that all squared away before you sign it.
And like Daniel said, it's you for short stories, you're probably going to get a set flat rate. For novellas and novels, you may work something out on occasion where it's like an agreed upon amount in advance. That's a possibility. But more often than not, it's probably going to be royalty share. You know, and that's the thing where we talk about where you're going to lose a lot of profit, you know, with a lot of publishers. Like, I think 50% royalty share is probably some of the best that we've seen offered. Would you say that that's fair?
Yeah. And if you go overseas with stuff, like some of my overseas contracts,
they're
more willing to give out advances, but they give a very, very low percentage on royalties. But you'll get a couple hundred, if not a couple $1,000 advances on overseas contracts, but you're only getting 10% on paperbacks and maybe 25% on an ebook if you're lucky. So whereas in the States, depending on the publisher you're going with, you might not get an upfront advance, or don't be afraid to negotiate either. So if you decide, hey, I don't want advance, I want to get, you know, 100 author copies instead. You know, that's also a negotiation tool. You know, don't be afraid to talk to these people. There's nothing is set in stone. It's just fucking typing on a computer.
Hey, what do you mean these people? You fucking triggering me, dude.
I'm sorry. You and your orange hat.
Remix!
Yeah, remix hat.
Welfare!
Yeah. DJ Beauregard. Rights.
Like, so about the audiobook rights. Does that mean, like, so if there's a clause in there for an audiobook right, does that mean after the 6 month period, you can't even. And, you know, they say, yeah, after 6 months, you can get your story back and do what you want to it. But if there's some audiobook clause in there, does that mean that you can't get your story back after 6 months and still do what you want with it?
The audiobook one is completely separate. That's six years. Years. Not months, just to be clear. So, like,
yeah
it's completely separate. So, like, let's say you did a six-month contract with a short story.
Mm-hmm.
And Yeah, you could reprint that story after 6 months, but you can't do an audiobook of it because
that's what I was getting at. You can reprint it and you can do it as a print book, but you cannot do an audiobook for 6 years.
Yeah, because the ACX contract is the same for everyone, and it's like if they're doing the book with ACX, that's it.
Yeah.
You know?
Gotcha.
Roland's freaking the fuck out right now. You know he's doing audiobooks. He's like going to rip out contracts and shit. He's like,
Roland's about to go fucking sue.
You know it. I was like, fuck.
did I fuck up?
No, you didn't. He's eating the fucking audiobooks. He's tripping out right now.
Well, but they would have had to have put a specific clause in for audiobooks into your contract, though, Roland.
Yeah.
So it would have to be specifically, if it's just talking about print, then that's print, but it should say ACX in a complete separate section.
Gotcha.
And now we talk about, you know, reaching out to people that have a little bit of knowledge. This is where we talk about building your brand and not being a dickhead on social media, because if you're a dickhead and you reach out to people for help, they're not going to want to help you. So you're going to be on Google looking at shit, and then you're going to end up in watching pornography or something like that. And you're not going to get anything fucking accomplished with your writing, at least. So growing your brand, you know, being a decent person to other people, this will help you in the long run. And, you know, people will respond to your private messages that you send them, even if it's, you know, weird pictures like Aaron sends at like 3 a.m.
And if, yeah. And then you will not have a sore shaft in that event, you know?
Yeah. You don't want chafing. Chafing's not good.
If you're just sitting there watching your pornography because you have no friends.
Yeah.
That's a sad place to be.
Yeah.
You know,
absolutely wretched. <It's> like,
looks off into the distance. Yeah. All right. Well, we're at a good time here, I think, to wrap up submitting to submissions. We can always talk about this more in the future, but primarily we kind of keep on the self-publishing path.
Real quick, if anybody has any questions about submissions or you have any advice for us, because we're fucking kind of dipshits, writtenandreadpodcast@gmail.com. You know, feel free. We always are looking for questions. We haven't seen Carver's stupid fucking sand mug in a while. So writtenandreadpodcast@gmail.com. Fuck that thing. Send us questions.
Yeah, send it, guys.
And always, always DM rolling weird shit, please.
Mm-hmm. I will. Yes. You don't even know. You send them in the wrong place because I will respond with my weird shit of my own.
Yo. It's good.
I am not about sending the dick pic.
Yo, that's that man of La Mancha, you know? All right, guys. So we've got
reader recognition.
Yeah, it's time for Carver Pike's reader recognition.
Whoa.
Yes.
Bring it on down, Carver.
All right. This time we want to say thank you to Ronald McGillivray. Ron, we just wanted to say thank you, man, because you've been awesome at sharing all of our stuff and commenting on our posts and just so Ron, we know Ronald McGillivray is also an author. He has a couple books on Amazon, Tales from the Parkland, and I know he also has one called James's Journey to Dreamland, which I think is like a young adult book or something like that. But he has a couple books out himself, so he is an author himself. But he's very selfless on Facebook, always sharing our stuff and commenting and getting involved in conversations and stuff like that. And it is definitely noticed. We appreciate all the help with sharing our stuff and just, you know, keeping the conversations rolling for us and always talking written and read stuff with all of us. So thank you so much, Ronald, for all you do for us. We appreciate it, man.
Yeah, Ron, yeah. It's awesome.
Anybody else?
Having people like Ron in the Facebook group and stuff and commenting on the YouTube stuff, you know, it helps create that discussion that we'd love to see. That's sort of the whole point of the show. You know what I mean? Is to hopefully spark discussions and thought in other people. And Ron's really been very receptive and supportive. So we really appreciate it, man. And thank you so much.
Yeah, he's definitely a catalyst for some good conversations. And you know, he supports us. He supports indie horror, and that's important. And anybody that can get conversations started and get the readers and everybody else involved, you know, it's a selfless act. And you can tell that he really enjoys the genre. I'm looking forward to hopefully checking out some of his stuff. And you know, just Ron, thank you very much. We appreciate you.
Thank you. Yes. I know him. I've seen him on Facebook, and we're friends. And I've seen the post that he's posted in the Written and Read group, and I appreciate the interaction. So just thank you so much, Ronald.
Awesome. Well, guys, this has been another great episode of Written and Read. At least I think so. Some people might think it fucking sucked. I don't know. It's true.
We didn't shit on Carver enough. We have to shit on Carver a lot more next episode to make up the quota.
A double load, you think, next episode?
A big old frothy load.
Oh, shit. Yo.
Jules is going to be like, he cannot, you cannot see them, you cannot go near them.
you're gonna look like a Spider-Man victim when we're done with you. Webs slung on you.
Oh, man. I'm going to look like the pretty bull sperm milker.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, dude. And all right, well, this has been the Written in Red podcast. Next week, we got a great episode that we're going to talk a little bit about networking and how not to be a total piece of shit. So again, my name is Aaron Beauregard. I'm the Splatterpunk Award nominated horror author. Remember, you can check me out on Facebook. If you want signed copies of anything, I'm happy to do that. And I got, be on the lookout, cause my, a book I've been working on for years now, 69 illustrations, Zach Dunn oil painting as the art on the book, in both paperback and hardcover. Nightmare Nirvana is coming. I'm going to be doing 100 paperbacks and 50 hardcovers for pre-order. They're going to be special packages. This is going to be one of my most extravagant releases. Keep your eyes peeled because I'm only going to be able to do 150 of those. Yes. Daniel?
Daniel J. Volpe, Splatterpunk Award-nominated author of Left to You and Talia, and my new book, Only Psychos, should be dropping shortly from D&T Publishing. That is going to be, if you are a fan of like The Shining, that solo location, snowed in, bad people in a little area, you're going to want to check this one out. It's going to be violent. So I appreciate everyone. I'll be setting up pre-orders for that as well. So check me out on social media, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, email at danieljvolpehorror@gmail.com. Raw Dog Roland Bursey Jr.
Hello, everybody. Roland Bursey Jr.
You you're saying goodbye. You're saying goodbye. We're leaving, Roland.
Goodbye, everybody. You can find me on Amazon. You can check out my website, RolandBurseyJr.com. I'm on Facebook. Send me a message. Send me a dick pic. I have something that I'm working on now with you guys. We'll talk about that later. And I have a solo project I hope to have out by the middle of the year. I appreciate you guys so much. Thank you so much. Carver Pike, take us out, please.
Carver Pike, please send Roland your dick pics. I'm on Twitter, TikTok, Instagram, Facebook. Substack, everywhere is Carver Pike. Look me up.
Yo, Carver Pike's everywhere, dude. Yeah.
Everywhere.
Carver Pike everywhere.
Man. He's like fucking chlamydia at a frat party. He's everywhere.
All right, guys.
That's all.
Awesome. Well, it's been a pleasure, I think. And again, until next time, keep it 100% horror.